Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book. The Lords of Creation, The History of America's 1%, is a work of American economic history and social analysis by Frederick Lewis Allen. First published in the early 20th century and later reissued in the Forbidden Bookshelf series, rather than focusing on abstract economic theory. The book examines how a small group of industrialists, bankers, railroad magnates, and corporate organizers accumulated extraordinary influence in the United States after the Civil War and before the crash of 1929. Allen presents the rise of the American financial elite as a historical process shaped by rapid industrial expansion, weak regulation, speculative practices, and public deference to wealth. The book is both a narrative account of the Gilded Age and a cautionary study of how concentrated private power can shape markets, politics, and public culture. Its purpose is not simply to describe rich individuals, but to explain the structures that allowed their dominance and the consequences that followed for the wider economy and democracy. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how post-Civil War industrial expansion created a financial elite. Allen begins with the decades after the Civil War, when the United States experienced dramatic industrial growth, railroad expansion, and corporate consolidation. This environment allowed a relatively small group of men to build vast fortunes through banking, steel, oil, railroads, and related industries. The book emphasizes that their rise was not accidental or purely personal. It depended on structural conditions such as limited oversight, speculative finance, and the scale of national growth. By tracing wealth accumulation to these historical circumstances, Allen shows how capitalism in this period rewarded control over capital transport and credit more than productive labor. The result was a new class of economic rulers whose influence extended far beyond their companies. This topic is central because it explains the origin of the 1% as a historical formation rather than a timeless elite, linking private enrichment to the transformation of the modern American economy. Secondly, the book's critique of unregulated corporate power and speculative abuse. A major theme is the absence of effective restraint on the behavior of powerful industrial and financial actors. Allen describes a business culture in which stock watering, aggressive consolidation, monopoly practices, and other forms of speculation could flourish with little accountability. The book does not reduce the era to individual villainy, but it does argue that the system itself encouraged exploitation when profits were protected and risks were socialized. This makes the book more than a list of robber barons. It is an analysis of how institutions failed to check concentrated power. Allen suggests that the imbalance between private gain and public oversight created a fragile economic order, one that looked prosperous on the surface while becoming increasingly unstable underneath. By treating speculation and corporate control as recurring mechanisms rather than isolated misdeeds, the book explains why unchecked financial expansion can produce long-term vulnerability in the broader economy. Thirdly, how wealth gained cultural legitimacy through media, universities, and civic deference. Allen's account goes beyond balance sheets and mergers by showing how the wealthy secured moral and cultural authority. The industrial magnates were often portrayed in newspapers as national builders, welcomed by universities as benefactors, and treated by civic leaders as indispensable figures in public life. This legitimacy mattered because it transformed economic power into social prestige, helping to shield elite behavior from criticism. The book is attentive to the way public admiration can normalize inequality when wealth is associated with progress, philanthropy, or modernity. Allen therefore examines not only what the elite did, but how the rest of society helped authorize their dominance. This cultural dimension gives the book its distinctive edge. It shows that economic power is reinforced by narratives, institutions, and respectability. In that sense, the Lords of Creation were not merely rich. They were socially validated as leaders whose interests were often mistaken for the national interest. Fourthly, the road from the Gilded Age to the crash of 1929. Allen frames the rise of American finance as a historical path that culminated in the stock market collapse of 1929 and the Great Depression. He connects the excesses of the Gilded Age and the Roaring Twenties to the later disaster by emphasizing continuity in speculative behavior, concentration of wealth, and weak correction of earlier abuses. The book suggests that the crash was not a random rupture, but the result of systems and habits developed over decades. This approach gives the narrative its historical force. Readers are shown how apparently successful expansion can conceal deep fragility. Allen does not present the Depression as an isolated event caused by a single decision. Instead, he portrays it as the consequence of accumulated structural imbalances. The value of this perspective is that it encourages readers to see economic crisis as historically produced, not merely cyclical or inevitable. That makes the book useful for understanding how financial systems can move from exuberance to collapse. Lastly, why Allen's history still matters for democratic accountability. One of the book's strongest implications is that democracy becomes vulnerable when private financial power becomes too concentrated to challenge. Allen's narrative asks how a society committed to public institutions can remain stable when major economic decisions are made by a narrow elite with outsized influence. This concern gives the book continuing relevance, because its arguments speak not only to the early 20th century, but to recurring debates about inequality, corporate power, and regulatory capture. The book is especially valuable as a historical warning. It shows that legitimacy, access, and influence can become as important as ownership itself, allowing elites to shape policy without direct political office. Allen's analysis helps readers think about accountability in systems where wealth can buy deference and where public institutions may adapt to private interests rather than restrain them. This makes the book a broad study of political economy, not just a period history of famous tycoons. In conclusion, The Lords of Creation is best suited to readers interested in American history, economic power, finance, political economy, and the origins of modern inequality. Historians will value its framing of the Gilded Age and the 1920s as a connected story, while general readers can appreciate its clear explanation of how elite power was built and normalized. Its practical benefit lies in helping readers recognize recurring patterns: speculative excess, weak oversight, media legitimation, and the tendency of concentrated wealth to influence institutions beyond the marketplace. Compared with many books about the rich, this one is less a biography of tycoons than a structural history of how the American 1% came to dominate national life. That makes it stand out in the genre. It does not merely condemn wealth. It explains the systems, incentives, and cultural habits that made extraordinary inequality seem acceptable. For readers seeking historical context for debates about capitalism, regulation, and democracy, it remains a sharp and durable reference point. If you would like to support Frederick Lewis Allen, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.